You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Sarek. I'm Chris, a.k.a. Kieran McDuff, from Glasgow.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Kieran McDuff. I've lightened up on that lately. Remember it was a Kieran McDuff.
Yeah.
But now, how have you been?
I've been good.
Yes.
We've got snow tonight. For the first time this year. Well, this winter.
Really?
Yeah.
How many milli-inches did you get?
Oh, it's lucky if it's half an inch.
It's okay for a half an inch?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, we've been getting snow for the last 3 days. It's been slushy, wet stuff that drives trees crazy. Power lines don't like it, and I don't either. It's like the shovel does no good. Yeah, I've got snow in my yard about 8 inches high. Just been piling up.
I don't mind a light dust at 8 inches high, so quite a lot.
They just popped a circuit. Hold on, guys. I'm sorry. Hey, Chris. Maybe you'll want to tell me why Cherry Pepsi's not good for you while I have to run up and see why she tripped the circuit. Hold on. I can hear. I got the circuit breaker down here and it went click. I got to go find out what they're doing before I hit it. Hold on.
Cherry Pepsi?
I have no idea. Hey, Chris, seen Star Wars yet?
Yes, I have. I've seen it twice.
Now. Yeah. No, ignore him. Star Wars wasn't bad at all, was it?
I've really enjoyed that, yeah.
did you get to see the Star Trek Beyond trailer ahead of
No, well, I seen it on YouTube, but I was expecting to see it at some point during one of the two showings of Star Wars, because I seen the first time in IMAX 3D and it wasn't in that, but I seen it earlier this week in 2D and it wasn't in that either, so...
No, I had the same thing. Actually, in complete fairness, I think I was a little bit late into the first showing that I saw. But then I took the kids to a Saturday morning showing, and it was mainly kids-focused stuff. So despite the promise of being able to see the new trailer on the big screen, it didn't happen.
No, so I don't need to be the small screen for me for a while.
Yeah, indeed.
That's the Captain America Civil War trailer, though, so pretty good.
Okay. Am I going to get anything about Cherry Pepsi?
No.
I'm not even sure I know what it is. I'm guessing it's cherry-flavored Pepsi, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
No kidding. Yeah, it's here. Wild cherry. Not just cherry, but wild cherry. So, Karen, okay, I don't know what I've asked you or what you said, but how have you been?
I've been good. I've had a nice festive period.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good. My son just turned 2 at the start of the month, so he's at that age where Christmas is really exciting. So,
So I take it you're married then?
I am, yes.
Damn,
what kind of question is that?
That's too bad. Well, no, I have a very serious question. I wanted to see if he was interested in becoming a male gigolo, and the reason is the Powerball in America is at $700 million. And if I win this, my wife wants us to build a mansion, or not a big mansion, just, you know, a big house, where each one of us has our own bathrooms and restrooms, lavatories, or whatever you guys call it. And
we call them loos.
Loos. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. We each have our own me. And then we're going to have She wants a manservant who's Scottish. I kid you not. She said she wants a Scottish executive chef who's easy on the eyes and has a thick Scottish accent. Oh, and you have to wear the kilt. But not only that, she said it has to be the old style kilt where the top is just kind of like a, I don't know how she described it. It's like something that goes over the head and it attaches to the kilt. Doesn't that make any sense?
Yeah, it's, I'm not entirely sure what the name of it is, but yeah, I know what she's talking about. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess it's either going to be you or Paul. You guys are the only two Scottish guys we talked to here, so.
It might need to be Paul then, because I'm not sure I could handle your 8 inches.
Hey, $700 million Powerball. I don't know what pound it is, but, oh, Doc, yeah, you already said once it was like 500 million something pound.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to bring light upon magic here, but I think that next week it's going to be about the same level of money
you're
looking forward to. Yeah, I think somehow it's still going to be at 700 million.
Yeah, because I know our stock exchange is tanking lately, so you never know, the dollar might be plummeting as we speak, and by next year it may be worse. So don't forget to remind me to bring up the Powerball story next week, okay?
Which I think dollar's been strengthening recently.
No way.
I'm pretty sure it has. Yeah. Hmm. Because when things tank, usually things go to dollar.
Hmm. Okay. So, I don't know why, but I'm typing this in. Let's see. Oh, you're wrong, Doc. It's only 482 million British pound.
Okay. What? I said 500. It's not that far away.
Yeah. What is your denomination in Scotland? Is it still the pound?
Yes, it's still the pound, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it may sound like a dumb question, but I've never been there. I don't know. Okay.
It's the same as England. There was a long conversation about that with the Scottish independence referendum 2014, and that was one of the more interesting aspects, was what currency Scotland would use if it became independent.
Mm.
But it was voted against, so it's not a concern.
Yeah, right. Okay, then. Well, then I guess we've got this started. Let's go into the synopsis.
Okay, so the synopsis for tonight's show is: violent emotions sweep the Enterprise when Ambassador Sarek comes aboard to finish a long diplomatic mission. This is the 23rd episode of Season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is May 14th, 1990. It's written by Peter Beagle from an unpublished story by Mark Cushman and Jake Jacobs, and directed by Les Landau. Guest stars include Mark Leonard as Sarek, Joanna Miles as Perrin, Rocco Sisto as Sakath, William Dennis as Kai Mendrossen, and Colm Meaney as Miles O'Brien. So, what do we think about this episode? I love it. I'm a big fan of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the first time in this season.
Yeah.
Especially at this end of this season. The last few episodes have been absolutely brilliant, and this one fits in very nicely.
Hmm. Okay, what about you, Doc?
I agree. I think we've been very spoiled this season, and I think once again we've got an extremely strong episode, extremely well written, great performances by guest cast as well as the main cast, but also at the same time completely different to everything that we've seen, and you know, and this hits heights in ways that are different than the other stories that we've seen hits heights. So you know, season three isn't it isn't all one single type of story. There's a lot of different kind of stories being told. And I think across the board, for a significant number of the episodes, they seem to be, you know, just knocking it out of the park. So I'm also a big fan of this episode. And I also think that there's one thing that I will probably bring up, that it's slightly subtle, but I really like the fact that it's Sarek that gets revisited. And it's not... He's treated with a great deal of respect, and what I mean from that, I mean the writers treat the character of Sarek that has come through the original series with a great deal of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't need to. I suppose. They could have either not had Sarek at all, or had had Sarek and tried to overmilk him. But I think they walk a very fine line over, and a very respectful tone taken in this episode as to honor the character and to honor the original series.
Hmm. Okay.
But you hated Lou, right?
Well, no. This is a great one. It's almost as good as the next one, Menage a Troy. I might like Menage a Troy even more next week. I'm not sure. But, no, this is a good one. This is a very, very good one. I think you're right. They were very respectful to Sarek in the history that he has brought to the not only Federation, but what he has brought to Star Trek in the history. So, good one. So, let's start out. The Enterprise is getting the distinctive honor of hosting a meeting between them and a mysterious people known as the Ligarans. Now, tonight, we're in orbit around a planet falsely calling itself Vulcan, especially since the real Vulcan was destroyed, what, a couple centuries ago? So, they're picking up Sarek, the father of Spock, who used to be captain of a previous ship named Enterprise. Maybe he wasn't captain, or maybe he was captain, but he wasn't a captain. I don't know. You know, history is just a little bit shaky on whether Spock was ever captain of the Enterprise or not. But we're picking up Sarek and his second Earthling wife, Perrin. So, do you think Sarek just likes to torture himself with all these emotional human women that he finds?
It's definitely his type.
Yeah.
I suppose, and if you're going to count the Final Frontier as canon, then his first wife was Vulcan, and a high priestess, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, he seemed to prefer humans. So maybe it's more of a statement on the Vulcan woman than it is on human woman.
Yeah, I mean, we only know of, I mean, if you count Final Frontier, you only know of three wives, but he might have had like more. He might have had like seven. He might have had like a string of Andorians after Amanda died, for all we know, and then a Tellarite.
Hmm. So
no, that's the only dignitary I know that likes relations with pigs as our Prime Minister.
Oh wow, great! Hats off on that one, Chris.
Okay, so here is a line.
That's completely over your head.
It certainly is. And matter of fact, I was secretly hoping that when I edit this show, that I'll actually get that. But maybe by the time I edit, I can look something up. I don't know what that meant at all. Do you want to school me on that, Doc?
I am not prepared to school
you. Okay. Okay, so anyway, here's a throwaway line that, you know, I never really got before. And then I thought of this line when I was writing notes for this, but he says, Picard says he met Sarek at his son's wedding. Which son is that? I don't recall Spock ever being married.
No, I would imagine if Picard said he attended as a young lieutenant, so we're talking the 2320s, maybe 2330s.
Yeah.
That's a good sort of 20, 30 years after the kind of events in the original series movies. So it's possible Spock did get married eventually. I can't think of any other son of Sarek.
Well, I mean, it rules out a Cybok, right?
Yeah.
See, he would have been dead by then.
Yeah.
Unless he had more kids. I mean, as we mentioned, you know, the half Andorian, half Vulcan, or half Vulcan, half Tellarite guys. They might want to get married.
Hmm. Okay.
I mean, it's never brought up again.
No.
But when we get to unification, there's no mention of your wife misses you, Spock.
Hmm. Okay. So, okay, yeah, and like I said, I don't know, I completely had missed that through all these years, but... Okay, so anyway, Sarek is supposed to be beaming aboard, but instead of Sarek and Perrin, we get... Chief of Staff Mendrowski What a guy. What a card, huh? I call him Mindrowsy, not Mindrosen. Mindrowsy. He's Sarek's chief of staff and his sidekick, Sackus of Crap. Sackus of Crap. They need to discuss matters of urgency before the bad Asador Sarek. I mean, he's badass, isn't he? And badass Asador Sarek and his sweet little wife, Perrin. Simply put, the ambassador is not young, and he tires easy and needs a great deal of rest. So, no funky disco parties in his honor. He needs to go straight to bed.
No disco parties, indeed.
No.
No dancing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the funky disco party does go on, and Sarek does show up for it, too. But that comes later. So, okay, here's a question for you. I think I'm going to have fun with this episode. The lovely couple beam aboard. Do you think the transporter screwed up, or why did Sarek really beam in almost backwards? Was it for the big reveal when he takes off his hood?
It wasn't much of a reveal, though. We knew it was Sarek that was coming on board.
Well, right. Right. But he comes up almost backwards.
That is pretty odd, because he comes up backwards and has the hood up. So he's obviously going for the dramatic entrance.
Yes. Mr. O'Brien, please check the transporter circuits. We don't need people coming in backwards. I'm surprised the transporter didn't turn him around so he's facing the right way.
Maybe just before he beamed up, he was distracted by something.
Tellarite. Whoa. Yes. So but here's another question then. And I just thought of this right now. Sarek is still on Vulcan while Sackus is on the ship. Who's keeping Sarek's mental discipline going? Do you think he can do it by subspace or by...
Well, you'd imagine that Sarek... we are jumping ahead of ourselves, but you would imagine that Sarek could just about keep things in check whilst they're waiting for... Well, while they're effectively waiting for the bus to pick them up to beam them up to the Enterprise. Either that or maybe the guy has, be able to reach him from from orbit.
Well, maybe that's the explanation. He was facing the right way when Sackus came up, and then in the couple of minutes he was on board the Enterprise before Sarek beamed up, that's when Sarek was all emotional, checking out the lovely ladies around.
Yeah,
can see if he could put lipstick on a pig, yeah.
Or maybe he started to wander off in his haze.
Yeah, I think that solves it.
Yeah. He didn't have the emotional support that he needed, and he started to wander off. But it's a good thing the transporter got him back in time. His, partial Alzheimer's state. So, anyway... These, my wife and my chief of staff and this man who knows why he's part of our party, but they worry about me too much.
He doesn't just say my wife, though. He says she who is my wife.
Yes.
Which is a callback to Journey to Babel, actually, because that's exactly how he introduces Amanda to Captain Kirk.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, later, you will leave me. He seems to be very much in control of the relationship.
Let me just pick up what Chris mentioned and also echo it. I think that this episode is very good at the writing for Vulcans. I think it's, to a certain extent, TNG got a bit of criticism when it launched without a Vulcan on board, and it seemed to be going away from the original the original series spirit in a way, but I think that with Sarek coming on, he is extremely well written as a Vulcan. The way that he speaks is very consistent with the character that we have, and I also think that the other, the younger Vulcan is also pretty well written as well. And the conversations that you have, you don't need to see the characters to know that it's the Vulcans that are talking. So all of this weird way of introducing yourself and the way that the way that, even if it's a standard sentence that even a human would say, the way that it's punctuated by the Vulcans is very, very consistent with the original series, and I think that that's great.
There was another nod to Journey to Babel in the introduction as well, when they mentioned that Corridon had got into the Federation thanks to Sarek, and Corridon was the whole point of going to Babel in the first place, was they were going to discuss the admission of Corridon into the Federation. So obviously they got in the end.
Right. That is a good callback. I didn't even pick that up. Good job. All right. So what do you think of the funky swimming pool?
Did they mention it was 150 degrees?
Was it?
Was that Celsius or Fahrenheit?
I don't remember that.
And there's the intention for Sarek to get into the tank with them.
I was just wondering that. You know, it's a shame we didn't see Picard and Sarek in their, you know, funky 24th century bathing suit.
I mean, we've really seen that once this season. I think it only comes out once a year.
Oh, the Speedo. Yeah. No, mm-hmm. I'm not willing to go back there again.
No, it's bad enough in this episode that we get the dress uniforms. Mm-hmm. I don't need the Speedos as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a slime pit. To us, it's a slime pit. To them, it's, you know, a lovely evening of drinks and martinis in the swimming pool for the Lagerans. We didn't get to see the Lagerans. We didn't get to see anybody in the slime pit. I feel partly cheated on that. But anyway, we have Wesley and Geordi working on the slime pit, and Geordi just wants to get out quickly because he has a date with Ensign Dumont. We really need to speculate on the young ensign's date. How do you think that part of that date went?
So did you say Geordi had to get out, or Wesley?
Wesley had to get out for a date with Ensign Dumont.
I thought you said Geordi for a second, but it's clearly going to be an extremely successful date, I would have thought. Especially because, you know, within a couple of weeks, Wesley's disappearing for the Academy, right?
Mm.
So he has to move quick.
He might go to the Academy. We're not sure.
Wesley's coming on about now. He's not quite the shy and reserved sort of, I don't know what to do with girls that he was in what, season two. Mm. He's a bit more confident in season three. He's a bit more grown up.
Oh, yeah.
He's been taking advice. He probably shouldn't take advice from Geordi, but I got the impression Geordi was a little jealous.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised you had the nerve to ask her out. And you know what's funny is that we know where this episode is going. Okay, with all the arguments and the fighting, and even these two get into it later. But just by the fact that I'm surprised, and that, I don't remember how it went. Geordi said something like, I'm a little shocked that you'd have the nerve to ask, or, you know, good job. And it looked like for a second, Wesley was like, what's that supposed to mean? It's kind of a teaser as to what's coming up later. But the first time around, you would never know what was happening. So what do you think of the room? Too bright? Get these pictures off the wall. It has to be Spartan. For more information on Spartan, please see Data's quarters. Anything?
I mean, the room seemed a bit... Yeah, the room seemed a bit weird. They did like focus a lot on it. I suppose the only point of the room really was to enable Sarek to come by and to get, you know, to get slightly agitated and to get worried about the preparations not being like, you know, fully met and so on. So I think that, you know, the room is what it is. I don't think it doesn't really go anywhere, right? You're right, they don't get the aliens bathed in the slime pool. It's a bit funky, I suppose, the swimming pool. It looks like it might be able to strip paint off. But better them than me.
Well, Sarek's been working on this for 93 years, so you can kind of understand why he's a bit pernickety when it comes to each individual aspect of the room. He wants to get everything exactly spot on. Doesn't want things to be broken by a silly table being in the room or a painting on the wall. Or he wants to get everything absolutely right. And the Ligardens seem to be quite officious when it comes to the protocol. So
yeah,
it's just probably important.
They did mention that, you know, if we managed to sit down and get a treaty with them, the benefits would be like incalculable.
Yes.
And it seemed a bit... maybe it would have been nice had this been more of a... I suppose more of a race that we then kind of learn more about. Because it sounds a little bit like, hey, this is the weird species of the week, that then nothing's going to happen. I think maybe one slight criticism of the episode is that if they could have made this... the stakes here a little bit higher. So had this been, you know, the Klingon Federation kind of negotiations, or had this been us and the Kardashians reaching a peace treaty or something like that, or in fact, had they just picked up this alien and then introduced them into the wider universe later down the line, I think it would have been nicer. Whereas as it currently stands, it's a bit of a throwaway line to this, you know, wonderful group of people that we really want to be friends with. But after this episode, you'll never hear from them again.
All right.
We get kind of species like this every so often, like the Sheliak, for instance, at the start of season. They were very much by the book. Everything had to be done by rules, and yet we never hear from them ever again. These Ligardens are certainly very much about protocol. I mean, even like Star Trek Insurrection has the bit at the start with the small creatures that Picard has to kneel down and get the thing put on his head, then he's got a... Is it Eugene Refor?
Mm-hmm.
Cusack or something along those lines?
Yes, yeah, I think so.
And that was very much a protocol thing as well.
Eugene Trafor. Yeah, you're right there. About the 93 years in preparation for this meeting, I guess you guys can decide, is a glass half full or half empty? Because 93 years, are the Ligarans that stubborn, or does Sarek suck at his job?
I think they're probably stubborn.
Was that meant to be literally like 93 years? Or was it more that there has been a process that has been ongoing and evolving for the last 93 years since, say, first contact or something?
He's been working on this for 93 years in preparation for this meeting.
Yeah, I don't think Sarek would have been involved in first contact, for instance. So, yeah, my interpretation of it was Sarek himself has been working on the preparations to kind of get the treaty with the Ligardens. So, I mean, we've probably known about the Ligardens before that as well. Perhaps we knew about them for a long period of time before that, but Sarek was the first one to really get through to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's been him that's been working on it for so long.
Then I know what happened. In a bar somewhere, a young James Kirk pissed off a Ligaren, caused a rift that took 93 years to get him back to the table. It was the same day that James Kirk got his ass kicked too. By Cupcake.
Here's the thing. I mean, if he has been working for 93 years, he must have been working during Journey to Babel on this,
mm-hmm.
because there's less than 93 years between the two episodes.
Hmm. So he's probably been working on a lot of things in the time.
Actually, I think it's slightly more than that. I think the 93 years would happen just after Babel. This is maybe his next project.
I mean, either way, I hope he's good at multitasking. Otherwise, it is all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, I mean, at the start of the 93 years, he would have had to deal with things like the death of his son and the Cathra aspect, all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure he was distracted over the 93 years somewhere along the line.
Or the death of a son that maybe he didn't even know about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The death of two sons, I suppose.
So, you know something we've never done? And let's see here. Actually, since we're going to be going into Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, James, I guess at some point we could discuss this of... I'm sorry, no. We'll eventually get to Cybok, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is who? Okay. He's Spock's half brother. In what way? Is he another son of Sarek?
Yeah. I thought it was Son of Sarek and this other Vulcan princess.
Okay. Yeah, same father, different mothers.
Okay. Okay, so obviously Sarek is just very committed. I suppose if he's only done one job, one thing for 93 years, eventually they would have gotten rid of him and brought on somebody else to get it done. But unfortunately, he's not going to the concert. But, it's going to go on, and Picard loves Troy's suggestion to invite Perrin on a date. Take her out. And he does. But did you guys enjoy the workaround that Picard did? I would like to invite you and your husband, if he's available, to this Mozart recital tonight. So he basically told the chief of staff to...
Well, I quite liked the way he did that. I mean, like you say, he did ask Perrin first. Mm-hmm. And so... It's only polite to then ask if her husband would also like to attend. So,
right.
I think that was a good way to get around it. Was it just me or like the actress that played Perrin looked like an older version of Vash?
Yeah,
it kind of puts a different spin on that whole. He invites Perrin out for a date.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So maybe he asked about Sarek, hoping that Sarek secretly wouldn't come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she was kind of stunned that you're here to see me. Oh, that's wonderful. That's very rare. Everybody's always here to see him. Okay. All right, now, James, be honest about this next part. How many times when you've wanted to be alone have you said, "My wife, you will leave me now. I require solitude."
Actually, so far, not at all. I've not managed to use that, but watching the episode, there are a lot of tips that I could pick up, right?
Yeah.
Because I this is the way that Sarek was always written as being, as speaking, and mm-hmm. I do like it, and I do like the, yes, you will leave me now. And I suppose, as Sarek gets older, he gets more grumpy, and he gets shorter and more stern with people as well. So I would look to use this in everyday conversation.
I think I'm gonna try that someday. My wife, you will leave me now. I require solitude. I don't know. It just seems to me it'd be a lot easier if you just said, "Bitch, get your shizzy out of here."
my take on it is, if I want solitude, there's a lock in the toilet door.
What?
Well, I can go to the toilet and lock the door and sit in the bathroom.
So, that is so true. Like when you get home, you get the mail out of the mailbox and you go into the bathroom and take 30 minutes to open a few envelopes to give you time. You're not around the boss anymore. You're not around your stupid coworkers. You're not around the barking chihuahua known as your child. Yes, I agree.
I suppose the 21st century equivalent is taking your phone with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It used to be on rolled up newspaper.
Yeah. Yes, you don't need that no more.
Nope.
Now I could find out what's going on in Scotland now. Okay, so anyway, the drama music starts to build up as we get back to Wesley and LaForge, the dick boss. And it's, oh my God, the way he just slams him. I mean... You know, what's your hurry? You don't expect anything to happen on this date. Well, of course not. It's a first date, Geordi. But, I thought it was funny. I thought it was, oh man, I'm like, ooh. At least I don't have to find my women on the holodeck.
Ooh. Yeah, Geordi must have went too near that tank because he got burned.
Uh-huh.
Did you notice that, certainly when Wesley was pushing back and saying that, oh, at least I'm not, I think he first threw out this and at least he's not going to spend his time reading a book.
Yeah.
And instead of Geordi pushing back saying, don't be ridiculous or whatnot, every time Geordi did say, well, what's wrong with that? I like books. You'll find lots of action in books.
Oh, no, what is, and then yeah. Went
go back and forth. And each time they were being defensive. So at no point did they try to counter the other one's argument. It was always that, hey, you spend your night reading books. Yeah, I like books. Oh, and you spend all your time on the holodeck.
No.
I know.
What he said was, you'll always get more action out of a good book than you will on this date tonight.
Well, you were right. It was a first date. Of course, he's going to get more action out of a book.
Yeah.
Unless this woman that he's seen is a bit more free. Mm-hmm. More likely to put out.
But, of course, we're not going to see how that goes on because Riker walks in and stops the argument.
They were going to end up in a tank, weren't they?
Oh, yeah.
If Riker hadn't walked in, they were going in that tank.
That's a good point. Yes, it could have ended up.
I
mean,
I would have paid good money to see Wesley wrestle Geordi in a big slime tub at 150 degrees Celsius. I mean, that would have been great.
Or at least Geordi just hold his face in the tank for a while till Riker walks in and lets go.
And if you got him out in his underwear, the traveler would probably show up.
Okay, now it's time for the concert. Oh, who's the lieutenant, D'Amato or something, that gets written up for insubordination?
Oh, but Worf, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a serious charge.
He called me a Klingon pudwack.
Oh, no, he directly challenged his authority. There's another thing we missed out. I'd like to know how he challenges his authority. I like to see that argument in action.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite unusual that Worf is so restrained. Given some of the other feelings on the ship, Worf manages to write them up for insubordination. Doesn't break his nose.
Right. There you go.
It's Belana Torres that does his breaking nose, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. He doesn't act like he's supposed to.
Yeah, and she's only half Klingon. I mean, imagine a full Klingon breaking her nose.
Hmm. Maybe he compared his face to a bowl full of gach. Yeah, you like your gach dead.
I do not.
There's no greater insult for a Klingon.
Yeah, really. Yeah. All right. But, okay, so the concert goes on, and it was very nice. It's a very nice concert till the end when it starts getting sadder and sadder until Sarek wells up a tear and it drops. And obviously, the first thing you see, you know that there's a problem when you see Sakath dip his head forward, and then you see Troy responding to Sakath, and then he kind of like nudges the, I don't know, what do you call it, chief of staff? What was his name? It was in here. Gosh darn it.
Mendrosen?
Yeah, Keem Mendrosen. So he nudges him. And then we have Perrin that wipes the tear away. How sweet. So, I don't know. But maybe, you know, I mean, just because he's a Vulcan doesn't mean he doesn't have tear ducts, right? He obviously does. He was just tired. Don't you kind of like tear up once in a while when you're tired? Or he has allergies.
Yes, something got into his eye.
Yes.
Yeah, it's possible he was sitting there going, I'm sure this was a Mozart concert. Why are they playing Brahms?
Yes, he should have noticed that, shouldn't he?
I'm going to have to credit the Memory Alpha for that one. I'd not up my classical music, but apparently it starts off being Mozart, but the scene where he's actually crying is Brahms' Sextet number 1 in B-flat major, which is also a problem because a sextet should have six people playing, and there's only four on the stage.
Well, maybe Data approximated the sound out of his ears.
So he can play 300 different styles.
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite impressive, I mean. Well,
but Tataya would be lovely.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wonder who Tataya is.
I have no idea.
I mean, it's strange, because in this episode, you're almost given the impression that Data can play kind of perfectly and in all different styles and stuff. But we've seen elsewhere and things like, you know, when he's painting, that he paints a mixture of things that are other people's styles that he like has as his own. But it's always something I'm always under the impression that it like lacks a certain stuff. And even his music, right, has been mentioned that it's supposed to lack a certain like emotional feel or whatever it happens to be. Whereas here, it's almost as if it's like a, you know, you just walk up to the jukebox and get a perfect reproduction of, you know, violinist A, B, or C.
Mm. Well, maybe it's just me, but I mean, I'm not exactly have a fine ear that I can distinguish different styles. But for me, it's always been the music itself that evokes the emotion. So I never quite understood that argument that Gladiator's playing could be perfect without any feeling behind it. Because for me, it's the music itself that's the emotion. And I think that's the point. I mean, certainly there's certain songs in my life that I associate with periods of my life, and like that song is playing during your first kiss and things like that. And so I can kind of understand why Sarek might get emotional at this particular moment. And there is also the aspect that the musical composure itself can be emotional sounding. Because B flat major is quite a sad sounding music.
Hmm. Well, see, what we don't know is that was he and Amanda's wedding song. That's what they danced to during their wedding. Now that's got to get you, doesn't it?
You'd be thinking we'd have a happier song at a wedding show. Yes. I suppose it might be a Vulcan wedding. So.
Right.
It's maybe a somber occasion.
So what was the deal?
During the Vulcan wedding, they have the... I mean, isn't that what they play instead?
It's not a Vulcan wedding unless it's a fight.
Or what was that? Something of boundless black, the funeral dirge that Neelix talks about.
I think the record must be the Bajoran death chant that lasts about 7 hours.
He said it was a traditional Vulcan funeral dirge.
Oh, was that specifically Vulcan? Oh. Like, I can't be as bad as 7 hours long, though.
Maybe it was Old Starry Night of Boundless Black or something.
Well,
something like that.
And people say the Vulcans are emotionless. What a title that is.
Oh, man. And what was the deal with Data's hand and arm? He was waiting to do his section at the time. He's got this robotic thing going.
Well, he was conducting, was he not?
Yeah, he's trying to be like the metronome, Mr. Metronome.
Yeah.
Sitting there going, tick, tick, tick. It seemed a bit weird.
I wouldn't have thought Data needed to do it, so maybe he was just doing it for visual effect.
Oh. Okay. All right, so let's see here. Where are we at in my notes? Oh, this next part of this episode is a complete five, all the way five, when Beverly bitch slaps Wesley.
A six, surely a six.
Six or seven at least. We have to go outside of our 1 to 5 for that.
Yeah, this is the bit that every Star Trek fan must love. I mean, even Fud Bob, who doesn't like Beverly Crusher, he must love this bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I got a feeling. It had to feel great, but then again, she feels bad because she's never hit him. Really? Not once?
Not even by accident?
You didn't accidentally run him over with the runabout?
But I doubt the loving mother that is Billy Crusher has slapped her son across the face. That seems reasonable.
She never slapped him in the hand. I mean,
Stop touching my tricorder.
Yeah, there you go. Don't take it apart. I gotta pay for this. Okay, whatever. But then next thing we get is a bar fight. And now obviously, this is not the first bar fight in Star Trek. So let's compare this bar fight to the one on Station K7. Which do you prefer?
I think I prefer K7. I mean, I quite like the whole sort of the Klingon goading them into the fight. Because the goading into this fight is just school playground stuff. Mm-hmm. This is our table. I don't see your name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah, no, that was stupid. No, that's O'Brien for you. I wonder if he got in any trouble for this, starting a ballroom fight. No one's talking.
I did like the fight, and I like the fact that it was O'Brien that kind of started it. Like, hey, are you sitting at that table, pal? I think that that's great, and I think he's only really in this episode, right, to start the fight.
I think so.
So I think it's all good. I like the melee that it kind of descended into very quickly. I think the only thing that the K7 fight has over it is indeed the start, when it's a Scottish guy that starts the fight after his ship is insulted. And then they also have is it Cereo Jones who's the guy that's wandering around with his drinks trying to drink them?
And
that's good, as you know, as he steps through it, he kind of dances through the carnage. But this one was pretty good as well.
My favourite bit of that fight has to be when Chekhov is punching the Klingon in the gut several times, and it makes no difference whatsoever. Yeah. The Klingon just whacks him across the room.
Okay, so then if we like the K7 fight better, then which K7 fight do we like better? The original one or the upgraded one for Trials and Tribulations? Because there was a lot more action in the upgraded one.
I quite like the Bashir punch, and then he grabs his hand as if it's really
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say, when he hurts himself after punching someone.
Right.
It's not that he's genetically engineered or anything. He's a superhuman.
No.
And it is really good when the red shirt turns up, who seems to be the biggest red shirt you've ever seen, and just grabs him on the shoulder.
Uh-huh.
Is that just in Trials and Tribulations?
Yes.
Yeah, dude.
The big dude. Yeah, that's good.
Just wait till we get to that one in Lower Pylon 2. That's going to be fun. But anyway, let's come back to the 1701D bar fight. Did you notice the guy who gets face planted into the bar? I mean, just the sound effect had to hurt. God, that had to hurt.
Yeah, it wasn't the only one that got hit in the face, though, and this is one bit that confused me. Riker gets scalped in the face. And yet, when we see the clean-up afterwards, Geordi's the one that needs to get checked out, and Riker doesn't have a mark on him.
Right, he doesn't.
Surely he should have a black eye or a busted nose or something.
And the guy who hit him, he looks to me like the Vulcan who turns out to be a Romulan in The Drumhead. He looks a lot like him without the ears and stuff.
Simon Tarsis,
he looks a lot like him. But I tried to do some looking, and they don't identify the guy who palms Riker. So, I mean, they don't really say who he is. So it's hard to say if it's the same guy or not, but looks like him. But still, how in the hell did he knock out Riker?
With one punch, that was impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was a lot smaller than Riker.
Definitely, but he obviously caught him off guard. Nobody's going to hit me. I'm the first one. You know. Okay.
I'm just rewatching, and there's a guy that gets slammed through a table. There are women fighting and beating up the men. It's all great stuff.
Oh yeah.
The one of the waitresses is kneeing a guy in the stomach.
Oh yeah, you know, when I do the picture for this on Trekmate, I'm gonna have to somehow try and get like a whole montage of pictures all in a row, and it's gonna have to be of this fight. The guy's palm to Riker, the waitress who beats up somebody, and the guy going through the chair, that table, that will be interesting to try and do. And since this is supposed to come out in the next few days, I better hurry. Okay, so.
And then the last one, there needs to be someone with a broom just cleaning up.
I wonder why he isn't getting pissed off.
I mean, poor Cena. 10 forwards a mess after this. He needs to clean that up.
Yes. Why does he need it? I thought the ship could clean itself. Well, good for the bloody ship. What happened to the ship cleaning itself?
Oh, yeah. Good point. Yeah, the ship used to be able to clean itself, and suddenly it needs. Well, maybe it only cleans itself to a certain extent. If you're starting bar fights and breaking tables and stuff, then maybe things need a bit more care and attention by members of the crew.
Must be. Okay. And then you bring up how the women are fighting. I thought it reminds me of a future episode with Vash, where they're in the sword fighting. And I think I remember in an interview that Gates and Marina, yeah, they know how to handle a sword.
Yeah, so the story that I heard about that was that those were the only two that were trained. I think they were trained in either sword fighting or fencing, but they were properly skilled at the art. And they ended up, from the script's perspective, they only knocked out people with plant pots.
Right.
And all of the men who were given swords, none of them had any kind of special training.
Right. I'd still like to know how they were able to train a female dog to play a male dog on Enterprise, but it's a different story. Troy and Beverly figured out that the trouble began when Sarek came aboard. Was Picard rather clueless on that?
That did seem rather obvious.
It does. It seemed very obvious, unless there's a lot of things that go on board that he just doesn't know about.
I mean, it's possible Picard's a bit distracted because he does have of his indignity on board. He's probably focusing on that aspect rather than the issues that are going on through the personnel, because I suppose that's more Riker's issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to picture a tongue-tied Picard. I'm just standing there grinning. I'm trying to... Now that sounds more like William Shatner, standing there grinning like an idiot. Okay, do you... Either of you had that reference, because I talked about it before.
Nope.
No.
It was my first Star Trek convention in the 80s at the Holiday Inn. You weren't allowed to ask him any questions. All you could do was shake his hand and walk away. And William Shatner just stood there. It was about the time that I believe The Voyage Home came out. And if you remember in the restaurant when he had that shitting grin, when he was talking to her all the time, he's, you know, showing her, giving her the teeth. And that's exactly what he did. He stood at the end of the line with his little grin as everybody walked, shook his hand. I love you in this episode. I love you. And, so that I'll never forget that grin. Kind of like what Picard was when he was trying to talk to Sarek. But anyway, they discussed the tier and how, you know, Picard says he can't believe a Vulcan moved to tier by music.
As it was kind of relatively emotional music. It's not as if it's like a Vulcan moved to tier by Metallica or Katy Perry or something. If you were going to be moved, it was a relatively decent movement to be taken by.
Actually, I could see a Vulcan being moved to tears by Metallica. You know, when their ears start bleeding.
Oh, maybe he's a big fan of the Enter Sandman. Hmm. Maybe Sarek was a Yankees fan, and he was sad at his retirement.
Yeah, I lost a lot of money on that. Right, got it. But we find out what it is. Sarek suffers from Bendai syndrome. It basically makes him a weepy woman watching a romantic movie. Don't tell Sina I said that. She'll get me next week on it. But it also makes everyone else around him erupt with hatred, you know, a.k.a. the bar fight.
Right. I know this is it's a syndrome that's causing it, but my understanding of Vulcans are touch telepaths, they're not able to project. So why are emotions able to project, if nothing else? If this is a telepathy-based thing, it should only be possible through touch.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Just like I can't understand why Picard would be acting the way he was later on in this episode. No! It's illogical! It is illogical! I mean, it's almost like Sarek downloaded his emotion to Picard. What if he decided... What if Sarek decided he's not taking it back? Will it just dissolve in Picard's head, or...?
No, it's... The main meld is a bit of a mixture. So what happens then is that Sarek's overpowering emotions, and they're always in there. Vulcans have always repressed emotions. It's not that they don't have them. So for his overpowering emotions to get transferred within the mind meld, and we see this several times in mind melds, actually. I mean, the Star Trek 09, they have the bit where Spock's emotionally compromised, and he has the mind meld with Chris Pine's Kirk, and Kirk ends up in tears because of it when the Vulcan's destroyed. So, I mean, the emotional transference thing is part of the mind meld. So that's pretty much accepted. So that kind of makes a bit of sense that when you're mixing the minds, things will transfer both ways. Because the whole point of the mind meld is for Picard's emotional control to be able to transfer to Sarek.
Mm-hmm.
To give him that strength to get him through the negotiations with the Guardians. So I was quite happy with the...
Oh, yeah.
That scene.
Oh, yeah, I love the scene. But what I'm curious about, like I said, what if... I mean, because obviously Sarek was completely emotionally stable now. He was his old self again. But what if he decided, I'm not taking that back? I mean, does he have to do another mind meld to take his emotions back? Or what happens to Picard?
No, I think as far as the mind meld goes, then the side effects of it subside over time.
Mm.
So eventually what will happen is Picard will get his emotional control back and Sarek will begin slipping back into being less and less controlled.
It's too bad Beverly didn't record some of his emotional outbursts to use against him later. Give me my way or I'm going to let people watch this video. No! It is illogical! Illogical! And then he starts running down the women he's loved before. To all the girls I've loved before. Amanda, do you know? Can you know? I don't know. Do you think maybe Patrick overplayed it just a wee bit?
No. I honestly think that was a terrific scene. I thought,
oh yeah,
Patrick Stewart's acting in that one scene. And it's one scene, I think, she was pointing out. That's one... From start to finish, there's just one cut.
Mm.
So I think Patrick Stewart's acting was phenomenal in that scene, and I think I full credit to him for that. But no, I think that was the strong, powerful emotion of that scene was exactly what was needed, because it gives us an insight into just how strong Vulcan emotions are when they're without the repression, without the control.
Now I might probably be going out on a limb here, but if there's one thing I'd change about the Patrick Stewart scene at the end, and it's literally a single word, I would remove the word Spock. And the reason why is that I think that throughout the entire show, Sarek has been considered as, he's not been thought of as Spock's dad, but he's been thought of as, Sarek of Vulcan. And I think that I would rather of them not reference Spock directly by name.
Mm.
Because I think that there's always a risk that you then overshadow it. So, I think that people can come into this episode and watch it as and not need to know that there's the family connection there. And I think that it's noting it, I think you allow it to slightly just stand on its own merit a little more.
I like references to the original crew myself, and he had a pretty bad rift with Spock, and the fact that they never were able to mend fences before Sarek died. Oh, I kind of like the callback, personally.
Yeah, I like that we find out later in Unification there's another rift. There was obviously the rift back when they were at Journey to Babel, but there's another rift at the point this episode takes place. That they haven't seen eye to eye, so they've kind of went their separate ways again. And I think that might play into it later on. And almost, I know what James is saying about it would be nice if Spock doesn't get referenced at all. But on the other hand, I like that this is the only reference. I mean, there's the subtle reference to the son's wedding, but they don't name him. So I'm quite happy with the fact that this is the only time Spock gets referenced in the entire episode by name.
Mm.
Yeah, and it has to be that. So I'm it's not that bad for me. Even though I'd prefer not to have been there. But if you had, you know, Picard and Riker walking along and said, "Hey, yeah, this is Spock's dad," and then maybe another scene with Wesley and Dr. Crusher going, "Oh, did you know that Spock dad's on board?" I think that would have been a complete mistake. And
yeah,
I think it was really good the way that they allowed Sarek himself to stand alone. And that's, so there's just a little part of me that thinks, "Ooh, did they need the Spock name in that scene?" And I suppose it's good at least that it's not, you know, Mark Leonard saying it. It is Patrick Stewart.
Cool.
But that's the one thing that I kind of wrestle with myself.
I don't think they needed that. I think they probably could have got away with this whole part about Amanda and then Perrin about how can they know that he loved him as he did. Throwing Spock in there makes it a family thing. So I can understand why Spock's in there as well. You're probably right. You probably could have left it out.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, something I passed over and I didn't think about mentioning this, but the chief of staff poo-poos Picard's notion of the bandy syndrome and actually seems to threaten Picard, you know, in the interest of your career. So basically, he just might get fired if he doesn't find the real cause. And Picard calls Data to his ready room. Now, we also skipped over earlier when Saketh talked to Data about, you know, tell me about Picard. What's his diplomatic skill like? Could he take over if, in the event, why do you ask? Is there something wrong with the ambassador? No. I'm just asking. And then later we get Picard calling Data to his ready room. And I thought, well, probably glazed over. We didn't really get it, but I think it's pretty obvious, you know, except besides trying to get information out of Saketh, why Data? It's because when Saketh asked Data if Picard was able to take over negotiations with the Lagarans, do you think Data might have reported the conversation to Picard as a possible concern? And that's why he calls him to his room, hey, you need to go press Saketh for a little more information.
I would think it was likely, but I think Data was also a good choice to go and speak to the Vulcan because, I mean, obviously Picard questions the human aspect. He asked Mendrosian about it. So it's a kind of human-to-human, and then it's a kind of logical-to-logical matchup.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, obviously, Data has more success than Picard does because Data asks the right questions so that we get to the point that, well, we know Vulcans don't lie. It's not that they can't lie. They just tend not to.
I really love the Vulcan in this, you know, the secondary Vulcan, not the Sarek Vulcan, but Vulcan in this episode. And I think that, you know, first of all, I do think that they won't lie, or they don't lie. I think that they can refuse to answer questions and stuff, but I don't think they're going to go out and out and just, you know, lie and not tell the truth. So I think that the reason why it's Data, and I think you're correct, Chris, it's that Data knows the right answers to the right questions to ask, because I think that what Vulcan is very keen to do, and even in this episode you see him doing it, is that he won't lie, but he won't volunteer information, and to a certain extent he will attempt to obfuscate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the bit when, you know, Data can get it out of him in three or four questions because he's just following the logical path that gets him there. There's the bit where Sarek starts asking, you know, are you helping me control my emotions? And he doesn't say anything. And it becomes very, very clear that he is. And then when he has to, you know, when he's forced to answer the question, he answers it in a way that is very Vulcan-like. He's obfuscating the truth, which is, yes, using my limited abilities, I am, you know, influencing you to a very minute extent. Effectively saying, yeah, I'm doing something, but it's not really that important. And I just love the way that the Vulcans are written, because it's, in my mind, it's how the Vulcans would behave. So it's always tell the truth, don't volunteer. But if you send the right person to have this discussion, and I suppose Picard does a little bit similar with his exchange with Sarek, is that you can, you know, you can get information out of them. You just have to make sure you're not, led astray or you're argued with out of the point of what you wanted to get to. So it was perfectly reasonable that Data was the guy going over.
Yeah, and you're right. It's not as if that Zakath actually admitted that Sarek had Bendai syndrome, because the question that ultimately got to that point from Data was, is the mission at risk? Rather than, does he actually have this syndrome? It's, yes, the mission's at risk, and that's what gets us to the point that we have to push on and get a resolution one way or they're going to cancel the mission.
Mm-hmm. All right. And you know something? I'm surprised that Sarek can't detect that Zakath was using his limited power or whatever to stabilize his emotionals. I mean, why wouldn't Sarek detect that or feel it or something?
It's an interesting point. I mean, again, it comes back to this question about Vulcans being touch telepaths as opposed to full-blown telepaths. And surely he shouldn't be able to do anything without reaching out with his hand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do we think of the lover spat between Picard and Riker?
Oh, the shooting match on the bridge.
Yeah.
I think this is fantastic. And I think it is very clever, because I was watching this and I think I might have just been jotting down some notes or something like that. And the way that the conversation goes from normal and then this escalated very, very quickly to something being wrong, it, in my mind, worked perfectly. And I think when I was watching it, I was just jotting down a note, and then all of a sudden it's Riker coming and said, why are we doing this thing with Sarek? Why are we protecting him? And then almost certainly after that, it comes kind of a louder response from Picard. And I kind of heard Riker and I thought, oh, that's a little bit strange for Riker. But I didn't twig that it was Riker now getting very emotional through the, through Sarek's interactions. And then when Picard answered back, I had to have a double take again. So I really liked how it worked, and it kind of tricked me. Mm. And I think the transition is very nice. It's not just... I think the interaction with Geordi and LaForge is very much a, hey, you think you're going to go on a date? And it's very clearly signposted. And it's very quick to find... to notice what they're doing. Whereas this one got me.
Seemed to come out of nowhere. Because they were having a normal conversation, and then bam, they just went straight into it. But...
Yeah, as James says, it's a very subtle transition between the normal conversation to the argument.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, it kind of felt forced. Or it just... I mean, it wasn't a ballroom brawl. And if Data hadn't stepped in, I wonder where that could have went. But I don't know. I just don't see that happening. Even in some kind of compromised state that the two guys that are running the ship all of a sudden have an emotional spat right there on the bridge. But I guess...
There wasn't much reaction from the rest of the bridge crew.
They all looked at, what are they going to do? Get in the middle?
Yeah. I mean, you had Ensign Gates sitting there under the helm, just halfway flying the ship, or whatever she was doing, parking the ship. Where were they at that point? Were they still on their way to the Lagan homeworld?
Right. Yeah. Were they there at the time? Or
I think they were still en route. So Ensign Gates would have been flying the ship at the point. Actually, I should say this is Ensign Gates' first appearance, and she's in it another 35 times. For someone that gets very little notice, she's there a lot. I'd love to know if she's there as often or possibly more often than Wesley.
So when you said Ensign Gates, you actually do mean the one that does appear, very, very frequently towards the end. Cause I didn't realize she was there, and I didn't realize this was her first appearance.
Yeah, I looked this one up on Memory Alpha. This is her first appearance, and she appears another 35 times after this. Now, that's quite a lot for someone who's just a bit part.
Yeah, because by the time you get past, well, obviously Wesley's going to be leaving in half a season's time, and then you need someone else there, and you kind of get Ro coming in, but Ro's in, what, 6 episodes, something like that?
Yeah, and it's only coming in at season 5 anyway.
Indeed.
She certainly had a lot more than Ro, yeah.
No, and absolutely. So whenever they need someone just to sit there, they seem to pick the same, you know, the same woman. I don't think she gets named yet, though, right? She probably gets named towards the end of the season.
To be honest, I couldn't tell you what her name was at any point. It was only when I read it in Memory Alpha that I actually realized she had the name. Because I don't think it probably gets referred to at some point, but I can't think when.
I think it gets referred to towards the end of, like, you know, season 6, season 7 territory, but I didn't notice her in this episode, so I'm going to try to figure this out now.
Well, I was just trying to do that already. Oh, I see. Ensign Gates, yes. She's in the back at one of the science stations. Oh, yeah, she does. Yeah, she does. She is Wesley's fill-in.
Oh, so she's not a con in this episode.
No.
Is she not?
No, she was in the back science station. Let me see. Who is at con?
Don't you tell me what to do.
I don't see anybody at the science. Oh, no, Wesley's at con, and it's an unknown female at ops. Unknown, probably the way she's described there, too, as her and Wesley glance at each other. I wonder if that's Ensign Dumont. Anyway, where was I? Okay, so what if it was a barroom blow, or I guess you could call it the bridge blowout? Who'd win?
You would think Riker, if it came down to physical blows.
You kidding? He got whacked out by a little ensign with one
punch.
Yeah,
but he wasn't expecting that one. He'd be expecting this thing.
Okay. Doc, what about you? Who's going to win?
So, Picard. No, it's always Picard.
It's going to have to be Picard. The only guy who can get a spear through the heart, look down and laugh while anybody else would be bleeding profusely and dying. I mean, you know, really, once you take out the heart, forget it. Everything's done. Absolutely done. But anyway. So Sarek agrees to take the Bendai test, or Bendai, or whatever it's called. But apparently he's not aware of how long it takes to get the results.
I'm sure he's perfectly aware. I think that was part of the ruse.
Yeah, I'll be past this before you ever figure it out. But he does tell Sarek to stop tickling his brain like that. And, of course, Perrin asks Picard to become one with Sarek. So Picard takes on Sarek's insanity, while Sarek takes on Picard's British arrogance. Excuse me, I'm sorry, his French arrogance. It's easy to confuse the two, right?
Now you're jumping over the logic debate off that occurs between Picard and Sarek,
yeah.
You know, as he tries to convince him that he can't go ahead with this. And I think that's I think it's a great scene. I think it's very well played by, you know, initially the entirety of the, you know, of the quorum there, but then later just Patrick Stewart and Mark Leonard. I think it's very good, and I don't think it's overplayed. And I think that, you know, a lot of props go for Patrick Stewart and him, and how he behaves in the final scene, or the final kind of big emotional scene. But I think that Mark Millar's done a kind of excellent job with the Sarek character, as he effectively loses it. And he shouts at the guy saying, what is it? It is illogical to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of screams it back at him. I think it's great stuff.
Oh, it was. I mean, Picard wasn't tongue-tied this time. Because he's 100% correct. how logical is it for you to do these negotiations in your condition? You're just going to get the Ligarans angry, and who's got 93 more years to try and calm them down again? Okay.
It's quite a sad scene, because Sarek knows there's something wrong, and he probably knows exactly what it is that's wrong, actually. But he's so proud a man, and he's done so much in his life that he doesn't want to admit it, and he wants to finish off this last piece of work before retirement, and he can finally rest. So it's kind of it probably calls out to a lot of people that watch this episode about how they like, might have seen loved ones who start fading away, and just as old age catches up with them, and it might even call it to people who feel that that's affecting them as they get older. So it's quite a sad scene to see a great man like Sarek just losing it as he does. And you're right, Mark Leonard acts it absolutely terrifically. And Patrick Stewart's reactions to it are just as good. It's just a fantastic scene, if quite sad.
Yeah. And I really do like their goodbye. You know, he's got a part of Sarek forever.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, did Kirk have exactly the same thing? Did he have a piece of Sarek after the mind melding in search for Spock?
No.
I would imagine he must have done, but it was never shown that way.
No, I don't think so. Well, no. Because it really, Sarek was just downloading a little bit of information about what happened. He wasn't trying to get his emotional. I don't know.
No, but it's still a mind meld, so there'll be some sort of transference between the two.
But he
may only have been a very small piece that Kirk had, because it was quite a short and focused mind meld.
I think realistically, there's, you know, mind meld or not, there's. You know, with Kirk's ego, there's pretty much no room left.
No.
So I don't think that Kirk took anything away from it.
No. But I think Sarek was young enough probably to stop any transference of bad emotion to Kirk or anything. He just wanted to know what really happened. So they beam off, and we'll see Sarek again. Little sad when we see him again, but we'll see him again. And the final shot, which that's kind of funny, we have Picard in front of the transporter thing, control, Riker on the side, and O'Brien behind. And as the shot pushes in, we actually see O'Brien move to the right to get out of the shot. I mean, you see his body actually move to the right. Maybe he wanted to, like, jab Riker in the kidney or something. Gotcha! Oh, Brian. You get me every time. Okay. All right. Did I skip over anything this week?
No, I think we know the mind meld scene was the important one, but we spoke about that a wee bit earlier, so I'm quite happy with that. That's
good. I'll try and do just as good next week as I did this week, and not skip over anything.
I did like the one final sort of bit at the end with another subtle reference where Sarek utters another line that he said before: "I will take my leave of you."
Oh yeah,
which he says to Spock at the end of Star Trek IV.
I guarantee you that when I'm working Monday afternoon and my relief guy comes on to take over, if I was to say to him, "I'll take my leave of you now," personally, I don't think he'll quite get it, obviously. "I'll take my leave of you now." "You'll take what?" Whatever. Okay. Doc, anything?
No, and I think it's my turn to kind of roll into the final thoughts and ratings, I think.
Hey, go for it if you've got it ready.
So, It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode, giving it a rating of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. I mean, if I can go first, I think this is a great episode of Trek. I think that it's a very personal story of the Sarek character that doesn't necessarily need to be Sarek, but the fact that it is Sarek and the fact that there's this connection to the, like, you know, earlier Star Trek universe, I think it just adds so much to the story this week. I think that, you know, Mark Leonard's performance is great. I think Patrick Stewart's performance is great. I like the, you know, I'm very happy with the story that, you know, fundamentally, right, didn't really get to the story. The story is about a guy that's slowly losing his ability to do his job and how, you know, how it's difficult to accept that. But at the same time, you have to, you know, acknowledge when you're past the ability to do it without endangering or without jeopardizing what you're, you know, what you're there to do. I really think it's very, very, very good. Similar to a lot of episodes this season, it's great writing, it's great performances. I think this is another, you know, top notch episode that stands out and is not, you know, I'm going to give this like a full 5 stars. I've given Yesterday's Enterprise 5 stars and The Offspring 5 stars. These are completely different stories and completely different dramas and completely different ways of telling the story, yet they still all fit together in this kind of great season of Trek. So I think it's just been really, 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 really good this season as they've kind of really got into their stride. I love the Vulcans. I think this is some of the best writing for Vulcans that I can remember. I think that Sarek is written like as with clear nods back to Journey to the Babel, and I like the, you know, as we've discussed, I like the other Vulcans involved as well. So yeah, I mean, I can't. It's not my favorite episode of the third season, but I really can't fault it for what it is, and what it is just a great character study of a beloved character.
Hmm.
So, you, Lou, or
yeah, Chris first? Yeah. We'll let our guest end the episode. Mark Leonard, like you said, terrific actor, even from his days as a Romulan on the Something or Another Encounter. What was it called? The Enterprise Encounter? Or what, do you remember? What?
No, Balance of Terror.
Balance of Terror. Got it. I don't remember, but he is a very fine actor. He's done great over the years, even in the movies. It's a terrific story. I really like this story. What happens to a Vulcan when he's over 200 years old and his lifetime of logic begins to short circuit? So I made a lot of jokes in this episode, but you know, it's all in good fun. I'm not even nitpicking. I'm just having fun with this episode because I like it that much. The fight scenes and the arguments, a couple of them kind of felt artificial. The one on the bridge, especially. I don't know. It just seemed like Riker turned on Picard very quickly. And really, it's a good question. Why are we going so far for this guy? I mean, why are we protecting him like this? What would you help me do, number one? So maybe it was Picard that actually went off the end. Let's see here. And then we see normally we see a very sterile ship. And now the crew are actually trying to kill each other. So the bar fight, you know, is it my imagination or our tempers become a little frayed?
I hadn't noticed.
And they walk into, and you could actually see the bar fight in progress through the windows. So I love that part. It was pretty awesome. And Riker gets clocked within about 10 seconds. He tries to hold two people apart and bam. I think this is not middle of the road. I at one point I was thinking this might be a little higher than middle of the road, but it's not. It's not, like you said, Doc, it's not the most perfect of episodes. There probably are better. We didn't get to see the Lagarans and how they'd be maxing and relaxing in their funky pool. But Sarek, the episode, it's awesome. I do like it. I was going to give it a 4 at one point. But no, it doesn't deserve a 4. It's either a 4.4 or a 5. And I'm going to go good on this one and give it a 5. So, Kieran McDuff, how do you feel about it?
Okay, so I'm very much the feeling that Star Trek is at its best when it's trying to say something. And this episode is the one where it's trying to make the point about, well, it's basically a dementia episode. So we'll pick a debilitating disease that affects people when they get older. Without it being dementia, of course, it's Bendix syndrome. And I think if it had been any other character, if it had just been some random character that was failing as they get older, then maybe the emotional impact wouldn't have been as much as it was with Sarek, because we know Sarek. We know, obviously, he's Spock's father. We've seen him, and by this point, Journey to Babel, Star Trek 3 and 4. So we have an emotional connection to the character as it is, and we've seen him be really strong in the past, and the courtroom scene in the Voyage Home is, at the start of it, is fantastic. He really does go out to bat for the Enterprise crew. So we have an emotional connection to him. So then see him beginning to fail in the manner that he is in this episode, it's heart-wrenching. So throwing that into the mix, and the writers do such a good job of building us up to the point where Picard finally breaks him down and we see just how bad it's starting to affect them and it is affecting the mission. I think the pacing of this episode is really well done. The acting, especially with Patrick Stewart and Mark Leonard too, like, as I said, I'm a fan of going back to The Balance of Terror when it was first appearance in Star Trek. I think the acting between those two was absolutely amazing. The scene between the two was probably the best, although I'm a big fan of the one scene mind meld with Picard and the effects he's suffering. So I'm glad that we also get to come back to this later in Unification, although, as you say, it's a bit sadder even then, because we see how much more it's the debilitating disease has affected them. So we get that emotional hit once again. So I mean I think it is one of these episodes that makes you think about that fear of getting old and losing control of yourself, and or even the fear of someone beloved to you having gone through that. Then it's an emotional one, and I think it's something I've probably come to see more as I've seen grandparents sort of head in this kind of direction since I first seen this episode, because originally when I first seen this episode I hadn't experienced any of that. So to see it firsthand, I think it tugs in the heartstrings watching this episode, because I've now experienced it myself. So I think for many, many reasons, I have to give this a 5 out of 5. It's a brilliant episode, and one I would happily watch again.
Okay. All right, then. That's a 5 out of 5. We only got 3 more episodes to go this year, this season, that is. Okay. All right, Chris, we will have you on again for Future Imperfect. And right.
Yeah, that'll be a bit more fun. This one's quite emotional.
Yeah, yeah. And that will be somewhere in April.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Good. Thank you. All right, then. All right, everyone, so that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. I want to thank you for downloading and listening, and join us next week as we review episode 24 for season 3, and that's going to be Menage a Troy. And we should have Cena on for that one, right? From 10
forward? Well, she's promised to be available.
Yeah, indeed. But you never know. Things might happen, and she might not make it.
Yeah, she's going to be cleaning up 10 forward after that bar fight.
That's true.
I know she's got experience cleaning up 10 forward after some of the podcasts that Fur Bob and Chris can get doing their own. That tends to get a bit messy, but I'm not sure how messed up 10 forward is by comparison after this bar fight.
She can handle it. So, all right. Again, Chris, thank you for coming on, and we'll see you in the forums. Nice and long form feedbacks.
You must be glad when I come on, because my feedback's usually quite a bit shorter when I've been on the podcast. Gives you a break.
Maybe we don't need to make you another host. Bring you on full time. That way when we read them, it's... I mean, have you noticed that once in a while we have to hand... I start reading and you should hear the outtakes. And at some point I go, James, my eyes are watering. You want to take over from here? And he'll take over. And that's funny.
I did breaks, you know, on 10 forward at one point. So
how many,
I can imagine.
Really? Yeah. How many times do you, as you're writing a forum, do you have to get up, maybe go to the bathroom and come back and continue on?
See, I make notes and as I'm listening, and then I'll maybe annotate them a bit more. And then when it comes to actually posting them on the forum, I'll go over them again and maybe add a few more bits. That's why the grams are like so much.
That's interesting.
So I was about to just ask a question about when do you send back the forum feedback? I mean, is it at home or is it at work or is it on the phone? Or
more often than not, it's at work.
That's what I suspected.
Do you want me to take that part out?
No, that's fine. It's at lunchtime. It's all right.
Oh, you could do that forum. It doesn't take us a lunchtime to get it all out. No, but you know that I got to tell you, though, I like it just because of the fact that you're dedicated. I mean, you really like what you're doing. You like the series. You must like the show. And it's very much appreciated that you actually are taking the time to communicate. Doesn't matter how long it is. If I got to let James do half of it for me, doesn't matter. It just means something that you care that much. So thank you.
Well, I mean, equally, it's appreciated that you guys do this podcast as often as you do. And I know it's a lot of hard work goes into this. So. And I'm not sure that comes across often enough in the feedback from my liking, actually. Anyway, I should praise you guys more, because it is a power of work to go through each and every episode, as painstakingly as you do. I mean, I only need to do it once in a while. And, I mean, most of my Next Generation knowledge is from memory, because I've seen the episode so many times, but you guys are sitting watching every single episode, making so many notes on it, thinking about exactly what's happening. And it's a phenomenal job you guys do.
Yeah, when we get to somewhere around season 6 and season 7, that's when my light bulb in my brain isn't quite functioning, because there's some of those I don't remember very well because I really didn't care for them too much. So,
it's one of the things I'm really enjoying about Upper Pylon 2, actually, because the early episodes of Deep Space Nine is probably the things I know the least about Star Trek. And there's episodes in there I haven't seen since the first time they were on. And because that's 20 odd years ago now, then I'm almost enjoying them again as if I've never seen them.
Yeah. And I do the same thing I did with Gamma Quadrant. Watch the episode, then listen to the review of it. So
I'm exactly the same. I've taken to tweeting when I'm watching the Deep Space Nine episode of the week.
Yes, and I actually have put my Lawyer to Lawyer podcast, which I still have a bunch of them to go through. I've actually put that on hold, and I've started Upper Pylon 2 Season 2. So I'm on like episode 2 or 3 right now, and we've got a few more to go. And actually, another thing is I'm going to be on Upper Pylon 2 for Whispers.
Okay, Whispers is fantastic.
I think it. I don't know why nobody took it. So it's going to be my first visit to the station.
I don't even know what episode that is. Feeds into what I was saying. I have no idea what Whispers is, and I'm not even going to look it up. I'm just going to wait for it to appear, and then I'll watch it and hopefully enjoy it. If James is saying it's fantastic, I'm looking forward to it already.
The thing is that I've got a real soft spot for season 2 and 3 of DS9, because I kind of got into it. Now, when season 2, 3 book was coming out, I suppose it was, what, 96, 95, 96, something like that. I don't know if that's right, but it's around that time. And, you know, I was around 15 or so, and I was buying the videos as they were releasing 2 episodes per video. Mm-hmm. And I've got all of the DS9 run. I've got kind of, you know, the latter TNG. I've got some of the Voyager runs as well. And Whispers is strange because, well, I've mentioned this before, but you often remember the double episodes that you watched. And I'm pretty certain that Whispers is backed with Armageddon Game. And the Armageddon Game is one of the harvesters where it's the Bashirin and Bashirin and Julian having a nice time on, you know, after this biological weapon has to be decommissioned. And Whispers is an O'Brien-centric episode that I just watched it so often. Yeah, I'd buy the video. I'd probably watch it every night before I went to bed. And, you know, the following day I'd have to be at school and then I'd watch it again to, you know, to go to sleep too. And so there are some episodes that, you know, because of the release schedule, I'd have like these two new videos or one new video for 4 weeks and I wouldn't have anything else to watch. And it would pretty much stay constantly in my video player I'd watch it, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 times or so before the next one came out. And then I'd watch that one. I'd keep watching that one. I mean, if it was any good. And occasionally I seem to remember, I think the episode that I've watched the most is the Homecoming, the Circle, and the Siege kind of trilogy at the beginning of season 2 of DS9. Really? For whatever reason, there was a drought. I back-to-back those, it must be 15 times or so. Mm-hmm. During when I was kind of, you know, 15, 16 or so. And it's strange. I think that as a result, I've got a weird sense of what I consider to be great DS9.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, Lou, we should also mention that, of course, we've got our season 4 episode list up available for anyone to put their names forward.
Yes.
For any episodes that they want to come on for. And you know, you mentioned how Whispers haven't been taken, but looking at it now, you know, Brothers hasn't been taken yet, Final Mission hasn't been taken, Clues, Identity Crisis, you know, some great episodes in season 4 that people should certainly try to snap up if they wish to come on and have a, you know, put their 2 cents worth over.
Yeah. Yeah. Send an email to loutrekshaw@gmail.com, please. And it's all in the forum. That's where we announced it. And we've already got a reply back that somebody would like to come on the show. Do you want to announce who, Doc?
So who?
You.
Oh, yeah.
The doctor okay. Says, oh, can I come on?
Indeed.
So which show would you like, Doc?
If I could do all 26 episodes, that'd be great.
Only for you. Only for you. I'll do that only for you. Okay. So everyone, join us next week again as we review episode 24 with Cena and Dr. Roberts. And then 25 is Transfigurations with Mark and Dr. Roberts. And then we'll have the Best of Both Worlds Part 1 with Blair and Dr. Roberts.
I have baby now.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Okay.
I do need to go and feed her.
Okay, go ahead. But what about forum feedback?
Can we do it next week?
Sure, no problem.
I mean, either that or it's going to be about 25 minutes.
Okay, all right. Good night.
Okay. Bye, Chris.
Good night. That's funny.
No, and I think it's my turn to kind of roll into the final thoughts and ratings, I think.
Hey, go for it if you've got it ready.
Okay, well, it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode. And given it a rating on a scale of 1 to 10, with obviously 1 being the worst and 5 being the best.
But you said 10, so you're going to change it to 10?
Did I? Oh, crikey. Did I rethink that? I've not done this for so long. So, let me rephrase. It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode, given it a rating of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best.